This is No Lazy Money with Nick and Jim from Peak Wealth Management. Real people, real money, real talk. And your host, Ryan Ermani.
760 WJR, welcome in once again. No Lazy Money, my good friends Nick Hopwood and Jim Pilot, President and Vice President of Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Gentlemen, you ready to go?
Ready to go. Thanks, Ryan.
Absolutely. Good to see you again, Ryan.
Well, absolutely. This is the show where we do not sugarcoat it. We don't want your money to sit around and be lazy and do nothing. We want it to work for you. Real people, real money, real talk with zero laziness. Over the next hour, we're going to talk to Nick and Jim about their holistic, comprehensive approach, and we're going to get them to share real-life stories about topics that mean everything to you and your pocketbook and, obviously, your future. It's No Lazy Money with Nick and Jim right here on 760 WJR. Here we go. No Lazy Money. It is our good friends Nick Hopwood and Jim Pilot. Gentlemen, good evening to you. Welcome in once again. Let's talk first and foremost about this idea of concentration risk. You've got all your money, all your eggs in one basket.
Yeah, Ryan, good evening. It's a major problem this day and age with all the tech stocks just running and racing to the moon, especially if you're an employee for, you know, let's face it, NVIDIA, Google, Apple, any of the others, and you have millions of dollars in these stocks, or maybe you're just an investor who likes to be aggressive, and next thing you know, you're thinking about retirement, and you have 90% of your portfolio in one stock, and there's huge capital gains, so you don't want to sell, but you have this single stock risk. So Jim, what do you do?
Yeah, it can definitely be a major problem, but all that risk tied up in one stock definitely needs to be addressed. So, you know, we have some solutions that we would talk about for people as far as, you know, funds where you can contribute your stock into these accounts. These accounts then can be used to diversify away some of that concentration risk. That's one huge thing. For other people, it may be a donation strategy, you know, looking to maybe donate some of those appreciated shares if you're charitably inclined. So there's definitely things we can do to address that issue.
Let me ask you, you mentioned a word, Nick, a moment ago, being aggressive. In a time like this where there's so much maybe uncertainty slash excitement about AI and where some of these companies can go, kind of going back 25 years ago to the dot-com boom, people see all of these investors making millions of dollars in dot-com only to see that bubble burst. Are we in potentially, if you can go back historically and just to equate it to the aggressiveness of people in the dot-com boom, you see a stock like NVIDIA, you know there's still growth there, but you want to get in on that. Is that something, not to speak of specific stocks, but maybe that sector as it is, do you see that a lot, just how aggressive people want to be? They don't want to miss out on this once-in-a-generation opportunity, perhaps?
I think about it every day because we grew up, you and I, right, like graduating in 2001, right at the peak of the tech bubble for the internet boom, companies like Cisco and Intel, it's taken 25 years to get back. They just got back, right? Intel just crossed over their 2000 high last week.
Isn't that something?
It's wild. So if you were an Intel employee or just an investor with all of your money in NASDAQ, all of your money in tech, yeah, you suffered, right? And we'll get to the sequence of returns risk about that next. But I think about this every day because AI, we're having a similar type of run-up. The difference is, you know, these companies are very profitable, right? They're just printing money. Whereas in 2000, it was more speculation. Okay, there's less, you know, the PE ratios were completely out of control compared to today. But right now, we're seeing these companies highly profitable, but they are doing an incredible amount of capital expenditure back into more AI development. And so that's possibly trouble for those companies. And they've also been used to all these stock buybacks. And now that they're spending money on AI, less stock buybacks. So that's an issue. But let me tell you a story here, okay? So about a year ago, a prospect comes into our office. He has 90% of his portfolio in one stock, a software company, and AI is now displacing the software companies. So the software stocks are down 50, 60%. All of his portfolio is tied up in the stock. It's up hundreds of percent over the course of decades. And he's afraid to sell because of capital gains, but he's also thinking about retirement. And you fast forward 1 year to today, stock is down, cut in half, okay? And now retirement is questionable. If he would have listened to Jim and done a 721 exchange, he could have taken all of that stock, deposited into the exchange fund, become immediately diversified into, think of the index. And now the index over the last year is up 20%.
Why didn't he want to do that?
He was married to the company.
Yeah.
Emotional.
And that's the emotional part of investing is something that I'm sure you see a lot.
He even brought up to us at one point that he had sold shares at a much lower price earlier and didn't want to do that again, right? Felt like he left a lot on the table because he didn't want to sell the shares. Or when he did sell shares, he sold at a much lower price than it was today. And I think just had that fear that people have the fear that these stocks are going to go up forever. And to your point earlier, that's why people keep chasing them. They don't want to get rid of them. They want to throw money at these hot stocks. But like Nick said, Intel finally just hit a new all-time high.
With the government's help too, right?
It's a big catalyst.
Absolutely. Jim, talk to me about that 721 exchange. And just for our listeners, explain that aspect to people if they don't know.
Yeah, in this situation where this client had a heavy position in that stock and having so much of their future tied to it, contributing those shares to a 721 exchange pools a bunch of different shares from a bunch of different people together. So think of it like trying to replicate the S&P 500. Now you've contributed a portion of your shares to that, and now in exchange you get a diversified piece of that now bigger pool of money. So now going from having that large concentrated position to now a more well diversified position that has exposure to all the different companies in the S&P.
And the key is you're kicking the can down the road with taxes. There is some illiquidity that you're giving up, but you're delaying the tax, which is wonderful. You're diversifying and not paying the tax.
What are some of the things in conversations with that particular investor or client? Does he just say, I blew it, or I wish? Like, what is his recourse now? I mean, is that... Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you sleep at night, to be honest with you. You work your whole life to get to this point, and then you make one bad decision, one emotional decision, and you're right back to maybe square two instead of square five.
It's true. So, someone who is looking at early retirement, they're now going back to work, and, they have to work for, they're still in good shape, but
sure,
they could have been in great shape.
No doubt.
And we're all about going from good to great, not in reverse. Okay, so that's what it comes down to.
I want to remind everybody, if you want a complimentary Social Security analysis, the first five listeners who contact Nick at peakwm.com, just put WJR in the subject line, indicate you have a question or two for Nick and Jim in your account, about your account, and they'll get back to you with that. So this idea of concentration risk, how many clients do you feel like, how many people out there in their investing portfolio is this a, I would say, problem for? You don't want to hang on to one stock or have so much of your money tied up into one stock for that long.
Oh, it's a minority. It's a rare amount. I don't want to say 1%, but maybe 10% or less, where you work there your whole career and you just continued acquiring shares and you never sold off because you love the company.
I have a friend that works for NVIDIA, and he loves that company. He loves that company.
But you have to have a strategy to divest over time, sell in some shares every quarter. These employees, they're getting new shares every quarter. So my view is to look at it like part of your compensation, where you're just getting new shares every quarter, so you're selling off the old shares every quarter.
All right, Nick, we've got a special guest coming up next. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, it's my dear friend Scott Westgate from MBC Retirement Services, talking about 401k plans and a lot of money being left on the table for small business owners.
Oh, that's going to be an exciting conversation. We'll have Scott Westgate, founder and president at MBC Retirement Plans. We'll do that next. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to No Lazy Money with Nick and Jim, our friends from Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth, 760 WJR.
You're listening to No Lazy Money with Nick and Jim from Peak Wealth Management. Real people, real money, real talk. Once again, here's your host, Ryan Ermani.
Right back here on 760 WJR, it is No Lazy Money, Nick Hopwood, Jim Pilot. We have traded out Jim, though. Nick, we've got a special guest, Scott Westgate, founder and president at MBC Retirement Plans, talking about something near and dear to just about everybody and when it comes to retirement.
Yeah, Ryan, 401k is our favorite topic, right? I mean, everyone needs a 401k, but unfortunately, about half of small businesses are not offering a 401k to their employees, and it's a real shame because it's the easiest way to save for retirement.
So, Scott, why wouldn't a company offer that plan, a 401k plan, to their employees?
Well, there's a perception out there, Ryan, that they're too costly, they're too labor-intensive, and would their employees even participate in the first place? And the employer might be also thinking that he'd have to put in quite a bit of money as an employer contribution to get it to be a successful program.
Is that, when we talk about half of companies, are we talking a lot of small businesses?
Specifically, yeah. Yes, the smaller companies that find it hard to attract and retain good people because they're all going to the companies that have those plans.
Would they be accurate in their concerns?
I would say they're not accurate in those concerns at all. In fact, late 2023, the government passed a new rule incentivizing small companies to enact new plans. It was Secure 2.0 is the name of it. And in fact, they provide a $5,000 tax credit for the first 3 years for a company to sponsor a new program. Basically, they're paying a company to put in a 401k plan for their employees. Costs them nothing. I mean, my fee's about a third of that to put it in. Maybe I should mark it up.
I wish that credit was around when we started our plan.
But this is information, and this is, you know, maybe financial literacy too for businesses that may not realize that there is new information about this and they can get in and maybe be more attractive of a business as well.
I think this segment is dedicated for small business owners or employees of a small business that don't have a plan. Listen up, because Scott's going to tell you everything you need to know about why they should have a plan and pretty much dispel all of those myths.
Please.
Well, like I said, it's almost free, if not free, to put in a plan. And then a lot of people, business owners, thought that the 401k plan, there's discrimination tests, Ryan, that are difficult to pass in most small companies. The government has allowed us to put in safe harbor plan designs where if a company can put in a minimum match or a minimum across-the-board contribution of 3 or 4% of pay for their people, you pass all the tests. And therefore, the key employees, the owners, the highly paid people you want to keep, can maximize their 401k contributions when in the past, they were used to getting refunds or were not even able to put their money into the program.
What about turnover at some of these small businesses? Is that a problem or maybe a reason why a company wouldn't offer? They've just got so much turnover at a business and so much confusion, they'd rather just say the heck with it.
Like costs to administer?
Yeah.
Well, that's why a company like mine is here.
Yeah.
So that we concentrate on those terminated participants. Mm-hmm. We concentrate on people, if they have loans or hardship withdrawal requests, they don't have to bother the business owner. They come straight to my company and make those requests, and we turn around those distributions, if they're allowable, within 24 to 48 hours.
If a small business owner listening to this right now is kind of on the fence or anything like that, what would you tell them?
Well, I would tell them that now's a great time to start a 401k plan. You've got to support team here willing to help you with all the setup, all the ongoing administration, and all the investment advice that you would need so that you can continue doing the business, making the money that you know where to make the money, and we would take care of all of the 401k labor and costs.
Scott Westgate, founder and president at MBC Retirement Plans, is with us now on No Lazy Money with Nick and Jim. And Nick, if you want to weigh in here as well on anything that you've heard Scott say, or just the idea, you know, for a lot of employees, they might want every single dollar of their paycheck too, but they're leaving a lot of money on the table on the back end.
They are leaving a lot of money on the table. And we see business owners come to us all the time, and they're not participating because they don't have a plan set up. And we can show them, if you put in 24 grand or 32 grand a year based on how old you are, look how much better your financial plan will be. Look how much more you will accumulate in retirement. And the same thing with the employees. I'm often telling the employees, go bring your boss to me, and we can show them how it's done. And so they're leaving a lot of money on the table with not putting it in, and also the matching contribution, and also the compound earnings. So, you know, it's Ryan, it's simple math, and a lot of people are just afraid to pick up the phone because they don't know what it's going to cost.
Talk more about that, just that first step in wanting to learn more about it, because I think that sometimes is a barrier for a business owner too. Maybe a little, I don't want to say embarrassment isn't the right word, but just not really understanding something. It's maybe hard to admit that you don't understand a lot of this.
Well, math. A lot of these people also, they get paralyzed when it comes to the investments.
Yes.
And they're afraid to take one step forward because they're afraid they're going to make the wrong decision. And Nick and Jim, they make sure that that doesn't happen, educate the people. And then since a new retirement plan for these new companies is basically free for the first 3 years, why wouldn't you want to start something that would help attract and retain terrific employees at very little cost?
The other thing is, if you have an existing plan,
I was going to go there. Yeah,
some of these are set up so inefficiently, they're suboptimal. They don't have a Roth component. They don't have an after-tax contribution component. They don't have a profit-sharing component. Maybe their investment fees are completely out of control. And so someone like Scott can read your plan, make it more efficiently, redo it, if you will, right, to benefit everyone, because a lot of people are set up on the old rules.
Who would be the ideal candidate? Let's say you have your business and you have an existing plan. Maybe that was just done less than 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 15 years ago. Who is kind of the ideal target there? Or is it everybody?
ERISA is the law of the land, passed in 1974, and it applies to all size companies. So, but we find our wheelhouse is, you know, the 40 to 80 employee company, that they really appreciate their plans usually. They're very responsive and cooperative, and they're willing to listen because we're all about maintaining and enhancing their 401k plan design. And that's where the strength of the
plan design, you said.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's where the strength of your plan's success evolves from.
Now, we only have six people, but Scott did a great job with our plan design, I have to say. Thank you.
You're welcome, Nick.
But that just goes to show, I mean, you know, all companies, all shapes and sizes, I mean, could really benefit from this kind of analysis.
Absolutely. And they're welcome to a free analysis. Every one of my prospects, I'm willing to come in, sit down with them face to face. What do you want? What do you want to improve? Can we even do it? And if so, here's my ideas within the rule of the law.
Where can people reach out to you?
You can email me or you can call me. My cell phone, which is available 24 hours.
I love that. Get a pen, baby.
It's 248-613-0358. And the website is mbcretirementservices.com.
That is amazing. We love cell phone numbers here. We want about, listen, when somebody is kind of trying to help you along 24, right, when somebody's trying to help you along 24/7 access to calm your fears, maybe you need a little bit of a therapist too to calm down, right? We've got you. We promise not to call you at 3 a.m. though, Scott.
I hope so.
That's great. Scott Westgate, founder and president at MBC Retirement Plans. Thanks so much. Nick, Coming up next, we're going to bring Jim back. Is that correct?
That's right.
Jim Pilot is coming back. We're going to talk about Social Security, when to take it. It's a big topic of conversation. Is the well drying up? What are those fears? So much about money is psychology, is it not?
That's right. And I'll remind everyone, they can email nick@peakwm.com for their complimentary Social Security analysis.
Get it now, nick@peakwm.com.
Or you can text me on my cell, but maybe not.
You're not giving that. 760 WJR. No Lazy Money with Nick Hopwood and Jim Pilot. Here are good friends from Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. If you missed any part of the live show, we have the entire show posted on YouTube. Just search Peak Wealth Management or type directly youtube.com/peakwealthmgmt. And you can watch us right there on YouTube. All right, we got Jim back. Jim, you good? Are you well fed and you got your coffee and took a nap and everything? Okay. We got you back in the saddle. Guys, we're talking about something that I think is a concern and the question of all questions in many households for a long time leading up to retirement, and that's Social Security and when to take it. We've got a lot of boomers here, and I say that respectfully. Coming up... I don't know what I can say and what I can't say anymore. I'm trying to figure it out along the way here, Nick, but let's talk about Social Security.
Yeah, so four in 10, 40% of baby boomers are saying that they want to take it at 62, even though it's a significant haircut, because they're afraid of the trust fund running out. And I say trust fund with air quotes, because there is no trust fund, right? We learned in Econ 102.
That's right. Shout out to Jan Gerson. Go blue.
Right. And she will tell you there is no trust fund. The government withholds Social Security payroll tax. The money goes right into the general fund. Some of it is sent out to Social Security beneficiaries now. The rest is spent immediately. So it's an IOU system. You know, some people call it a Ponzi system, but whatever. The point is, there is no trust fund, and so, well, they say the trust fund is going to run out in 2033. That just means this IOU will be spent down.
Which means the government will, at some point, adjust whatever they have to do or make new laws or new language or new bills to fund it.
Yeah, so are they going to just print more deficits to maintain the same promised benefit, or will the benefits be cut by 25%? Which is the anticipated deficit in the Social Security payroll tax.
Or raise the age.
Yes.
Or raise the amount of income that they'll tax the Social Security up to. There's a lot of levers they can pull. You know, I think it's important to realize that. And that's kind of been our stance, is that we think that eventually they will do the right thing to fix it in one way or another.
That's a lot of confidence in Congress.
Well, that is.
You know, I was there in April. In the halls of Congress. And let me tell you, they get a lot of work done over there. There's a lot of decisions being made over there. I kid because I care. But nonetheless, the age at which to take Social Security feels so dependent. It's such an individual decision, though, too. Isn't that where kind of gentlemen such as yourself come into play here, to walk people through when to take it? Because not only... what you're getting from the government, but taxes are such a big part of this.
Right. So if you are, Ryan, if you're still working, you absolutely should consider delaying past 62, because for every dollar you earn over $23,000, you're giving back half of your Social Security in the form of a penalty. So the decision tree is, if you're 62 and working, you don't collect, right? You delay. Now, once you get to 67, which is the normal retirement age, you know, you could consider, and you're still working, you could collect, and no penalty would be enforced, okay? You could also delay till 70, where it stops accruing after that point. So no one should wait past 70, but many people should wait beyond 62. If you don't have a big portfolio, if you're more lower income type in the economy, your Social Security is going to be a larger percentage of your retirement income. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's an even bigger decision in that case. But Jim, if you have a big portfolio and you want to do some tax planning, you might delay, right?
Yeah, delaying Social Security could open up a lot of opportunities for tax planning. You know, could give you a bigger window for doing Roth conversions and things like that. Because now, if we have a brokerage account we can live on, we're not collecting Social Security, we're showing really low income to the IRS, which is a great opportunity to convert some of that pre-tax money. A lot of people have a good pre-tax balance because that's what we were always taught to focus on, right? Is you got to put money in your IRA, your IRA. Well, there's also Roth that acts differently, but most people have that pre-tax balance, and it just opens up a bigger window for you to really do some planning to help benefit your situation.
Another reason why we counsel people to delay as long as possible is to protect the spouse, because oftentimes one spouse has a higher Social Security and another one has a lower Social Security. Whether they stay at home or not, it just oftentimes works out this way. And if the higher earner delays, it actually protects the surviving spouse because he or she would then step up to the higher amount after the first spouse passes away.
That's an interesting element to, you know, when to take it as well. You mentioned, though, a minute ago about lower income people. How much of Social Security is what people would like to do versus what they have to do? A lot of people take Social Security because they need the money. Yeah. What do you tell that person? I mean, you are leaving money on the table. There's no doubt about it. But if you need the money, how do you avoid penalizing yourself again to put, you know, you're in that position for a reason, and then you're further kind of. Yes, you're compounding more financial bad decisions, if I could say it that way, for lack of a better way to say it.
We rarely see anyone who is working and taking the Social Security and paying that penalty. Mm-hmm. But what we do see is people taking it at an earlier age, and it is a permanent reduction. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily characterize that as a penalty. Mm-hmm. But when we're doing our financial planning and we're looking at the projections, we can push a button and show them, here's if you take Social Security today, and here's how it looks, and here's how it looks if you take it next year or beyond. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't make that big of a difference. Like you said at the top, it's very personalized. It's a very independent choice. For some people, it matters a lot, and for some people, it matters less.
Jim, what would you say to somebody out there right now, 58, 59, 60 years old, 61, 62 even, worried about AI coming to take their jobs and, you know, being forced into retirement. And if they could hold out, would you say hold out, do whatever you have to do to hold out in that case? Or again, is this so individual that...
Yeah, it really is individual. I think you really have to take it case by case. Everybody wants to know what their number is. What's the best time? Like, there's a right answer for everybody. But in reality, there's not, because you just gave a perfect example of somebody who may not have a big portfolio. They're not working. And the withdrawal rate on the portfolio would be way too high to ignore Social Security. So you just have to turn on a lower rate. But for most people, if they're in that situation, you just need to have that conversation. You know, that's where we would couple the planning work in with the Social Security analysis, because Social Security analysis enough isn't enough. You need to know if you're on track. Are you doing the right things through your financial plan? So I would say that would be the time to really have a conversation with a professional to see if you are in a position to retire with confidence.
What we want to do is optimize the Social Security timing with the rest of the portfolio, with the rest of the plan, because they work together. Obviously, if you punch into a computer program, how do I maximize my Social Security? It's going to tell you to delay till 70.
Right.
Okay, so that's not going to help. But how does it work with the rest of the plan? And how do we optimize everything working together?
That's a big puzzle piece, no doubt about it. And again, if you want a complimentary Social Security analysis, the first 5 listeners who contact Nick, nick@peakwm.com, you put WJR in the subject line, indicate that you've got questions for Nick and Jim about your account, and they'll get back to you. And again, if you missed any part of the show, we have it on YouTube. It's posted. Just go to youtube.com/peakwealthmgmt. Peak Wealth Management. We're coming right back. Don't go anywhere. We're going to talk about halftime. You've made all this money. Now what? 760 WJR.
You're listening to No Lazy Money with Nick and Jim from Peak Wealth Management. Real people, real money, real talk. Once again, here's your host, Ryan Ermani.
760 WJR. I want to let you know about the book offer as well. If you want the book, email Nick at peakwm.com. Let's say, how about first five? First five emails that you get, you're sending them a book, right?
That's right.
Tell them about the
book. And the book, it's called Halftime by Bob Buford. So this concept of halftime, you've made a lot of money, you've had a lot of success, and then you find yourself asking, well, what's next? Right? You kind of, the thrill is over of making money. You've had enough, right? And what do you want to do next to be more fulfilled, more significant in the world?
I hope I have that problem sometime.
You know what though, Ryan? A lot of people, they're afraid to make that transition.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. I mean, that's the psychology of it all, though, too. What fulfills you? If making money no longer fulfills you, what will kind of take care of that enjoyment?
Well, I always think of it as, you know, being significant in the world, like making a change. Instead of counting, you know, the scorecard is like you're growing your net worth or growing your portfolio. Well, let's make impact on people. How many people can we impact? How can we change the world in that regard rather than just my own bank account?
What do you say to that, Jim?
Yeah, it's a concept, obviously, that it doesn't work for everybody, but we see it. You know, people who have become successful, have had these great careers, and they just want to pour into the next generation. You know, they want to do something that's significant that they feel like is impacting the world, and it's a great place to be, and it's a great mindset to have. You know, of course, to do that, you know, you got to start with the financial plan, you know, and we would say you got to make sure you're on track. Is your plan rock solid? Because like we talked about earlier, it's scary, right? For somebody who's 45, 50, 55 years old to just up and leave the workforce. A lot of times people have a lot of, you know, anxiety over that. But if we can show you that your plan's in great shape, it can open the door for this halftime concept to become real to you.
But I would think that would be extended out to anybody that, you know, puts work aside. You know, you've made money, you've retired, whether it's 45 or 65 or 75, and you've had this burning sensation to get up every day, go to work, earn a living, provide for your family, and then one day, again, whether that's 45 or 75, you don't do that anymore. How do you fulfill yourself? How do you make sure that you are that you have a purpose every morning? That's something that I think everybody has to look at in the mirror.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. It's not just someone who got rich and had a lot of wealth, right? It's anyone who's leaving the workforce, right? It can be just a traditional retirement. And one of the things that we always counsel people on is, what are you going to do with this 40 plus hours a week after your job ends? Okay. And, you know, but for the purpose of this segment, we're thinking more about the success to significance. And some examples come to mind, okay? So we have three of our clients who have left the workforce and went to work for the church because that was their calling, right? They're not becoming a priest.
Sure.
But they're helping the church and in some cases getting paid, in some cases not, right? So they're left the corporate workforce.
That.
Yeah. And so their retirement plan works, and they feel significance, they feel fulfillment, like they're not selling widgets, right? They're working for the church, which I think is awesome. Recently, another gentleman he hasn't pulled the trigger yet, and he doesn't know what it looks like, but we had the same exact conversation. He works for one of the big tech companies. He's getting, you know, tired of working 16 hours a day. And now, you know, he wants to go volunteer somewhere or start a nonprofit. And I think that, you know, that's tricky, but it's exciting.
But there's a lot of people like that. You know, I know a couple of people myself that have made enough money and they've Now they dedicate their lives to the schools or to the church or something that makes their own community better. If you, you know, we are so hyper-focused in what I do regularly at WJR. We focus so much at a federal level, federal politics, even to the state local, the state politics a little bit. But how people's local communities are impacted by people that just want to do good by their neighbors, that is really what makes community, and that's what makes the whole thing go. If you can go help your neighbor clean up, grab a bag and go clean up trash or paint a fence or whatever, plant a tree, whatever it is, we need people like that to go to the corner and work at the church.
In January, my wife and I took a weekend trip to Jamaica, just a couple's retreat, and there is this hurricane in the fall that ran through Jamaica, and all of the roofs on all these little small homes were ripped off. There's this organization, Texans on Mission, mm-hmm. that I connected with these guys while I was down there just randomly, and I helped work on the house. And these guys were down there for weeks. Some of them were retired, spending a lot of time down there. Some of them were spending their time off work vacationing to go volunteer. And a group like that, right, it's not just going to Jamaica. There's all places across the U.S. for disaster recovery. And that was really inspiring for me, and it really made me think.
No doubt about it. All right, guys, I got less than a minute to go. Let me ask you your final message. If you recapped tonight's episode, what would you tell people? And again, let people know how to get in touch with you.
Well, Ryan, the theme woven throughout, whether it's portfolio concentration risk, sequence of returns, social security, halftime, it all comes back to the financial plan. So if we keep doing what we're doing, how is the future going to look? And we can help answer that question for people.
Jim?
Yeah, I think I would add, like you said, you know, with the halftime concept, it doesn't have to just apply to people who have been so financially successful they don't need to work anymore. Sometimes it's just a mindset shift, and maybe your role at work now is mentoring the next generation, helping bring up the next employees that are going to be the ones to take the company forward.
Gentlemen, I really enjoy these conversations, and we hope you listening out there get a lot of benefit from it, because all of this financial literacy, all of this trying to get your mind thinking in terms of doing things the right way and setting yourself and your families up for the future are really important. Nick Hopwood, Jim Pilot, Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. If you want to get in touch with either of these gentlemen, nick@peakwm.com. You can, first five, going to get a free book, Halftime Con, the Halftime Concept. Nick will send that out to you. And the first five, of course, going to get a free Social Security analysis as well. nick@peakwm.com. You can put WJR in the subject line as well. Gentlemen, thanks so much. And again, if you missed any part of this conversation, we have it posted on youtube.com/peakwealthmg7600WJR.